Good morning and welcome to the Roundtable panel, The Week in Review. I'm Sarah LaDuke, the producer of the Roundtable on WAMC. Each weekday morning, WAMC's president and CEO and political observer Alan Shartok and Roundtable host Joe Donahue are joined by various experts, journalists, educators, and commentators to discuss current events. On Roundtable Panel The Week in Review, we feature your favorite panelists discussing the most important issues of the week. This past week, mostly during the Roundtable Panel, WAMC reached its summer fundraising goal, and we are so grateful to our listeners. On Monday, May 24th, Joe and Alan were joined by political consultant and lobbyist Libby Post and Albany Law School professor and director of the Immigration Law Clinic, Sarah Rogerson.
Let's go to what we're working on today. Alan mentioned the Belarus force down. This is a weird story, a fascinating story, but the dissident Roman Protasevich.
Sounds right.
Okay.
Don't look at me.
It may not be right, but there you go. Co-founded a Telegram channel that is a popular opposition outlet in Belarus. The plane was flying from Athens to Lithuania when it was forced down. The strongman president of Belarus sent a fighter jet to intercept a European airliner traveling through the country's airspace on Sunday and ordered the plane to land in the capital Minsk, where a prominent opposition journalist aboard was then seized, provoking international outrage. The stunning gambit by Alexander Lukashenko, a brutal and erratic leader who has clung to power despite huge protests against the government last year, was condemned by European officials who compared it to hijacking. It underscored that with the support of President Vladimir Putin of Russia, Mr. Lukashenko is prepared to go to extraordinary lengths to repress dissent.
He's a dictator. And so one of the things about this guy, I think he's the last standing dictator in that whole area.
That block.
Yeah. And he is brutal. I only want to say that I do have an interest in all of this because I believe my mother's family came from Minsk. Or was it Pinsk?
I don't know.
Probably Minsk.
Would be your guess, Minsk. Besides the fact that I was fascinated that this guy was flying coach. Libby, what do you make of it?
Well, this is quite the strong arm tactic by, you know, Putin Jr. I mean, that's basically who this guy is. He's been in office as quote unquote president for over 20 years, maybe almost 25 years. And last year there were so many protests against him and he managed to survive. And the woman who ran against him for president, I think the election was rigged. I don't think there was really any question about it. You know, they want to get rid of dissenting voices. I don't think we'll see this guy again, the 24-year-old. Who they took off the plane, 24 years old, a brave young man speaking his mind who will probably never be seen again. This is how they operate.
24. And then what do you do? Like, what's the plus on this as far as what do you get from doing this? Sarah?
Well, I think they've got a bunch of different objectives, one of which being to really send a message to the opposition that they're not afraid to break international laws in order to suppress dissidents. It reminded me of Khashoggi and the length to which dictators go to suppress and to, you know, terminate those who spread truth and light. So, you know, it's a targeting of a journalist on his way to see an opposition leader, someone who hosted a very popular resistance platform, someone who was changing hearts and minds or fortifying them. And this sends a blow to all of those folks who are looking for hope in a desperate situation.
So what is
increasingly
Putin,
desperate?
So Sarah, where does Putin come into all of this? Because Putin is an ally. And Putin certainly has done some miscreant-like things himself, right? So, you know, there's a certain ability to thumb one's nose at the severe criticism that the dictator is taking here.
Yeah, well, Russia is right next door, and certainly helps the what are they calling him, the last European dictator,
right?
To have that big, massive Eastern non-European ally to do all sorts of things, to play mind games with their own people, to align themselves with a show of force and strength and protection, really. Look at what has happened to other destabilized regions adjacent to Russia, right? And Belarus, you know, I had a professor, I took courses for a master's in diplomacy and international relations, and one of my professors was actually someone who left Belarus and always had really interesting asides about the politics on the ground there and the poverty, the deep lasting poverty forced by dictatorial government. So I don't know, I guess I remember watching her and very viscerally, you could see that she was viscerally processing the politics in her body in a way that only someone with a lived experience could. And so the influence that Putin has and the influence of this kidnapping essentially isn't just for show, and it isn't just a show of force. It's also, I guess you could say, psychological warfare and emotional manipulation to keep people from speaking out.
What do you think happens next in this Belarus case? I mean, as far as I mentioned, there is great concern in the world community, as there should be, and you know, now what do we do?
So if Lukashenko gets his way, you know, nothing, because he has Putin and that's all he really thinks he needs. On the other hand, you know, the world community is outraged by this. Sarah, what do you think happens next?
I have no idea, but, you know, there's a lot of outrage as there was over Khashoggi. What happened there was there was several different investigations.
Right.
Trump gave some cover, as I recall, and we found out 2-3 years later what really happened, which was what everyone suspected. And the tragedy of it all is that it all happened after it was a preventable death that wasn't prevented because the outrage came after the incident occurred. So it goes back to the comment about preserving the foundation and the bedrock. I mean, we should turn our outrage to preserving independent media outlets. And I'm not taking advantage of a tragedy to pump the station, but like, you know, a very valuable way to channel your outrage is to support independent journalism domestically and abroad. And the United States has traditionally been a beacon of journalism as a bedrock of democracy, and that's at risk. So making your voice clear here goes a long way towards addressing the global issues, because it's the democracies that international tribunals point to set norms and standards for international behavior.
Sarah Rogerson on the Roundtable panel on Monday, May 24th. This is the Roundtable panel, The Week in Review. On Tuesday, May 25th, Alan Shartok and Joe Donahue were joined in studio for the first time since the COVID-19 outbreak began 14-ish months ago by the investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo and The Empire Report's J.P. Miller.
All right, so we have a panel here. We have waited a year and a half to welcome panelists back, so we're going to get ready, put them to work. All right, here we go. We begin with the story about Belarus and sanctions. We spoke of this story yesterday. The EU agrees to impose sanctions on Belarus, barring EU airlines from country's airspace after authorities forced down a Ryanair jet. I want that guy. Put the planes in the air. Bring it down. I want that guy. Rosemary?
Yeah, I've been talking to a friend who is a journalist in Minsk who is pro-state. She works for state media, and debating this with her. And she said, no, that guy's more than a journalist. He's a 26-year-old opposition politician, and he's dangerous and he's bad. And the argument ends right there. That may well be true. In Eastern Europe, journalists are frequently also activists, which increases the it's a conflict of interest that we don't allow in this country, despite Chris Cuomo, and it makes for danger. However, when the United States was after Snowden, remember that?
Yes.
And they used their allies in Europe to not let a plane that was flying him land any place in Europe. Do you remember that? They couldn't fly over the state, and it was forced down in Austria. The prime minister of Bolivia was on that plane. He was horrified and outraged, as it was all of Latin America, rightly so. But there is a big difference between not allowing a flyover to help out another country and claiming there was a bomb scare when there was not, and then sending up a jetliner. That was a hijacking. That's international terrorism. Despite what that guy did or represents, the government of Belarus has committed an act of terrorism. It was applauded and possibly abetted by the Russian government, and the United States and Europe is right to take as strong an action as they can. I worry that they can't take action strong enough, and that this has increased the danger for journalists, for aviation, and for sovereignty of countries.
Will sanctions work in this case?
I don't know what they can do that would Lyshenko has nothing to lose. He's worse than Trump. He totally stole the last election. It's not recognized in most of the world, but it is recognized by Vladimir Putin, who has power and balls. I think he's probably the mastermind behind this. And they've taken a step that the rest of the world is aghast at, but doesn't know what to do. Well, it's like moving into Ukraine, which Vladimir Putin also was behind.
Well, the Putin thing is really, I know you got to go to.
Yeah, just put that.
I know you got to go to the break. But the Putin thing is the interesting question here. You are so right, Rosemary, because if Putin is behind him and said, go for it, that's one thing. If Putin wants to make peace with the United States, which apparently he does right now, we're hearing those rumors, he wants to get in better with Biden than he is, then that's another whole story. So we really don't know.
It's your turn, J.P. Miller.
Well, my turn is going to unfortunately be a question for Rosemary, which is why do you think Lyshenko did this in such a dramatic fashion? Wouldn't he have to know that this is going to alienate him from the world, alienate him from Europe? And if they wanted to get this guy, couldn't they get him some other way than bringing down a passenger airliner and hijacking it?
No, he's been working in exile for years, and so they wanted to get him. And why? This is Putin. This is a bold, unexpected, completely never before done, untested, unprecedented action to send up a jet after a commercial airline. It's just horrendous. And he got away with it. He's got the guy. They put a forced confession up. Guy's beaten up, his face is bruised.
Yeah.
And he got away with it. What can they do? They can not fly to Belarus. He already was on the outs with most of Europe anyway. His only ally, he has two. One is Putin, who's, I think there were KGB agents in on this all along. And number two is China. If you go to, I was in Minsk 3 years ago, just briefly, I'm no expert on it, but there were no Europeans there. It was all Chinese. The second language at the airport is not English, as it is in airports all along the world. It was Chinese. They don't care.
Hmm. I think I announced yesterday that my grandmother came from Minsk.
From Minsk, yeah.
Or comma. Was it Pinsk?
And what do you think will the United States have a different response than the EU, or will they join the EU? I mean, what can the international community do about this?
I think Biden has signaled that this is on Europe, and they're going to follow along and support what Europe does. We have so little to do with Belarus. We have no trade with them. We have what dealings do we have with Minsk? None. They are so tied to Russia, and secondarily to China, that he has no need of us. Lushenko has pulled a big play, and he's going to be supported by every autocrat in the world who has enemies. This should strike fear into dissident movements, into journalists. That again, I think in many places that we're talking about in Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union, the two are connected far more than they are here. But yeah, this was a big, bold move, and he pulled it off.
Well, yes and no. First of all, a lot more people now know this guy, the dissident journalist, than ever knew him before. So his message is out there in a way that it would not have been before. Secondly, those planes from Minsk can't land in any other European city. So to some degree, he's hurt himself, I think. But I agree with your analysis, Rosemary. I think you're right. This is clearly had to be cleared with Putin first.
Oh, yeah.
What happens to the guy?
I was going to ask that, too.
He's in trouble. They have him on a charge that has a 12-year sentence, but he has been declared a terrorist. He's a dissident, and Lushenko has said he's a terrorist. And the sentence for that in Minsk, death. In Belarus, is death.
Yeah.
And when it was apparent what was happening, the plane was going down, he said to fellow passengers, "A death penalty is waiting for me." And they took his girlfriend, and there were three other passengers that no one's been able to identify. But the thinking is, and I think it must be their KGB agents. And in Belarus, they do still call it KGB.
And the right. the journalist or the person that was captured appeared on a video saying, "I'm
yes.
fine," but that's just propaganda.
They're treating me the way they should, and he had a cowl or a hood over his head, and there were bruises on his face. So it's a forced confession. He's confessing that he helped bring about mass protests against the election of Lushenko, which, again, has not been recognized by much of the rest of the world. And there were mass protests, and he did not need to organize them. The people were outraged that Lushenko declared himself the winner.
Last dictator in Europe. Yeah.
The last dictator in Europe, yeah. He's not loved in Europe, so he risked very little. What does he care if Europe doesn't approve of him? It never did.
You're listening to Roundtable Panel, The Week in Review. I'm producer Sarah LaDuc. In between this topic and the next, Alan Chartok and the panel raised some money for WAMC. And we thank you all again for helping us reach our goal. Here's more from Tuesday's show.
Today is the one-year anniversary of the killing of George Floyd that that sparked so much unrest during the summer months in this country a year ago, in the middle of COVID. The president will meet with George Floyd's family amid uncertain progress on race. Derek Chauvin went to jail, but what now? You know, there's still a lot to reckon with.
Rosemary? It's very disappointing. A year later, there's no meaningful reform. At the federal level, I'm talking about, and that seems stymied, as does a whole lot of other programs Biden has proposed that we need action on. I hope Merrick Garland I keep seeing him as the rescuer in all things related to the alleged election fraud and police reform, because he can go in, as the DOJ did under Obama, and actually investigate systemic racism and procedures in a department. There's also some hope at the state level. New York is looking at a reform bill. You may know more about it than I do, JP, but that seems very reasonable, in which you're actually looking at and setting guidelines for use of fatal force. And the rules are amazingly lax. Basically, it's the cops can do what they want. And that's how we've gotten into this situation. And there has to be a situation where you get into trouble if you're going to kill somebody who's stopped for a minor violation, a traffic violation in many of the cases we're looking at, and he ends up dead because he's resisting, when the cops could just write down the license plates and go get him later. A law to address that is at least a first step. But in a year, we haven't managed to do it. And I fear very much that the killing of George Floyd is going to be like the shooting in the Connecticut school. And we'll say, oh, if that didn't solve it, what will? And a year from now, we're going to be saying that about police brutality.
I do think that obviously the nature of what happened did create and cause a national conversation, And I do give credit to Governor Cuomo. You know, he came out and he mandated that every police department in the state of New York, if you want to get funding, that the police departments would get together with the elected officials and would get together with community leaders and present a plan. And Governor Cuomo didn't mandate this is what the plan has to say. This is, he just wanted to start a conversation between the community and the police. And of course, it hasn't solved all the problems in New York. There's still a lot of problems in New York, but I give him a lot of credit for starting that conversation, and hopefully that conversation will happen elsewhere. It also, as I think back a year ago, we were kicking off a presidential election. And I think that President Trump's conduct during and after what happened with Mr. Floyd really cemented in a lot of people who were undecided at that point. May I vote for this person for re-election, for President Trump? And his conduct as president was not to unite the country, which is, of course, what a president should do during a time like that, but it was to further divide the country. So that's another thing that I look back on as we remember a year since his death. And I'm a little younger than you guys. I was 11 years old in 1992 when the Rodney King when Rodney King happened. And you know, as I grew up, I say, you know, President Obama was elected. And you think all this progress is being made, and then something like George Floyd happens, and it just makes everybody reevaluate how much progress really has been made in those 30 years since Rodney King in 1992.
You are so right, because systemic racism in this country has been a cancer which has been growing since people were brought over in chains from Africa. We know it. We know that Lincoln did what he could do. He was assassinated. And from then on, we had just a mess in this country. So it is true that the police should really be reformed, and we should watch who we are putting on our police departments, because that's what it's really all about. But in addition to that, we really have to somehow tackle the inequality that exists in this country. Now, if you listened to NPR this morning, you heard the most amazing story about how the Trumpians are suggesting that Black Lives Matter is this terrible communist group which is doing all the big lie. They just won't stop lying. They won't. Mm-hmm. It's terrible.
I do think that to see George Floyd as an exceptional case is also a mistake, even though, of course, it was an exceptional case. And that is that what happened to him has been happening to people for years. It has continued to happen in the year since. There's been no change whatever in police statistics on how many civilians they kill, white and black. If Black Lives Matter doesn't get you, consider that it's white civilians also getting killed at a rate in this country that far surpasses that in other developed countries.
Rosemary Armeo on the Roundtable panel on Tuesday, May 25th. Please note, as you listen, any given topics, details, and facts may have changed and evolved since the panels took place live earlier in the week. We'll be back with more of the Roundtable panel, The Week in Review, after this. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel, The Week in Review. I'm Sarah LaDuke. On Wednesday's Roundtable panel, Alan Chartok and Joe Donahue once again welcome Rosemary Armeo, along with lecturer and adjunct professor in communications at SUNY New Paltz and RPI, Terry Gibson.
Prosecutor in the Trump criminal probe convenes a grand jury to hear evidence and to weigh potential charges. Manhattan's DA has convened the grand jury that is expected to decide whether to indict former President Donald Trump, other executives at his company, or the business itself. Should prosecutors present the panel with criminal charges, according to two people familiar with the development? The panel was convened recently and will sit 3 days a week for 6 months. It is likely to hear several matters, not just the Trump case, during its term, which is longer than a traditional New York State grand jury assignment. These people said, like others, they spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss an ongoing investigation. Generally, special grand juries such as this are convened to participate in long-term matters rather than to hear evidence of crimes charged routinely. The move indicates that District Attorney Cyrus Vance Jr.'s investigation of the former president and his business has reached an advanced stage after more than 2 years. It suggests, too, that Vance thinks he has found evidence of a crime, if not by Trump, by someone potentially close to him or by his company. Alan, what should we make of this?
Well, I do know that I've been sitting here because I know that Rosemary always has something pithy, P-I-T-H-Y, to say. So, Rosemary, you take it.
You want me to take this?
Take it, Rosemary.
Well, it's a nice step, but it's no means a guarantee. We've had plenty of cops in this country go up before grand juries and there's no indictment. It is very hard in this country, we seem never to do it or rarely to do it, and to send the rich and powerful to hold them account. And I still suspect that is the case here. I'll believe it when I see it. You can't make anything from a grand jury. It's secret. We don't know how many cases they're handling. We don't even know for sure what the case is against, if it is against Trump, or if it's against his children or executives of his company. What's going on? It's all going to be very murky for months yet. It's very hard to be patient in this.
But we do know, Rosemary, right, from one excellent source, who actually has gone to jail for this already, Mr. Cohen, who's laid it all out. He said he superinflated the amount of money that he paid for properties and did all of that stuff. That's all against the law.
Well, so, he also told Congress that and nothing happened. So, I mean, it's very rare in our country that we send the rich and powerful and hold them to account. And there's all kinds of ways to get out of it. We're just seeing this with Steve Bannon, whose case of total fraud, and the people who were indicted with him, they'll go on to a trial, and he's been pardoned. So Trump is, by this. And Trump himself, there's a lawsuit against him by Representative Eric Smallwell. Is that how you say his name? Smallwell? From California. And his defense is that as president, he had absolute immunity, didn't say a word about the other people who were also charged in that case. So Trump is completely capable of claiming innocence for himself, just hold all my children and my executives to account. It's a good sign. Better than Vance coming out and saying, no, we're dropping the whole case. I grant you that. But we're far, 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 far away from him being behind bars.
Terry Gibson.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how this is going to play out in terms of how it might affect the midterm elections, because if the timetable they're talking about in the article plays out, it's going to be well into early next year before there would even be a trial, if there was a trial. And it would depend on who is on trial. If it's just an associate of Trump, if it's sort of three levels removed from Trump, I don't think it's going to be such a big deal. But obviously, if it's Trump himself who is on trial and we go into the midterm elections, that's going to be a very big deal, because anything that makes him look bad, I think, does only help the Democrats and hurt the Republicans. But I'm not going to hold my breath, because we're talking about a president that's been impeached twice, has been accused of pretty much everything you can imagine, and somehow always seems to weasel out of it. And while I certainly would hope that they find something there, and it seems like they're on track to do that, past situations give me reason to be very cautious about what I can expect.
Well, I'm still scratching my head about the whole Cy Vance business. Here's a guy who, as far as I'm concerned, has it, because he's developed all of this information over all of this time. He fought to get the tax returns and everything else, and yet he's not continuing it. And so there'll be an interruption between him and the next person who comes in. Mm-hmm. And everybody is opining in all of the news columns mm-hmm. that who that next person is going to be very important. And yet we're given no clue as to who they are, who yep. the potential successors are in all of this. And I'm concerned that he is bailing out at this time.
Well, there will be an election, right?
Yes,
so,
of course,
so that
yes.
will be determined through a New York City election.
But, of course, we'll have to know who's running.
Yeah, we don't.
We don't know that.
We'll, once the mayor's race is over, we'll see kind of who's left that maybe wants to run for that.
Yeah. Well...
Yeah, yes. And I keep thinking, I'm sorry, of Robert Mueller, who also was a very careful, dogged prosecutor. He spent years amassing a lot of information and indeed a strong case, wrote a long book about it, and nothing. Nothing.
Yeah, yeah. Nothing. Yeah. All right. We are going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We'll have another hour. We have an hour to make the money that we need. Which I will tell you is about $38,000. So that's a lot of money in a short period
that's
of time.
That's 380 of us out of 500,000 of us. 380. That is absurd if you think about it. And by the way, while we're at it, I do tell you, I do want to thank our president of New Pulse, who is apparently retiring, and we, Don Christensen. We think he's a great guy.
I think. We will be looking for a new president, soon New Paltz, over the next several months, and be interesting to see how that works out.
If elected, I will not serve.
Okay. I'll let them know. I'll let them know.
And you?
I don't think I'll be on the
okay,
list.
Right.
Well, no, you look like a college
yeah,
president.
Yeah, I do. You do.
Well,
you're
very much gray around the temples.
Somehow,
and
I don't...
you're a man.
Okay.
Well, we've had a wonderful woman president of New Paltz in our history, and I'm sure that's all on the table.
Alan Chartok on the Roundtable panel on Wednesday, May 26th. On the Roundtable panel on Thursday, May 27th, Joe Donahue and Alan Chartok spoke with Chief of Staff and Vice President for Strategy and Policy at Bard College, Malia Dumont, and Publisher Emeritus of the Daily Freeman, Ira Fussfeld.
Here we go, folks. The big story is that Joe Biden is asking the intelligence community to redouble efforts to determine the definitive origin of the coronavirus. President Biden said Wednesday he had asked U.S. intelligence agencies to redouble their efforts to determine the origin of the coronavirus, an abrupt departure from the previous White House position of relying on the World Health Organization to uncover how the contagion spread. The new message reflects a notable shift in some prominent scientist assessments that the virus all but certainly jumped from an animal species to humans. The theory that has more recently gained traction is that the pandemic, which has killed more than 3.4 million people worldwide, may have accidentally escaped from the Wuhan Institute of Virology in China, though that is far from conclusive. Alan, you have weighed in this before.
I've always thought this is a real possibility. Not only that, we're now learning some stuff we didn't know before. One of which is, one piece of this, is that several of the scientists who worked in that Wuhan lab got seriously ill.
Right.
And that is an indicator. Now, we know that Trump, for all his lousiness, tried to pin it on them, too, but not for the right reasons, because they were from China. That's why that was his approach. But you know what? The fact to me that Joe Biden is now saying this is serious and we have to consider it indicates he may know something we don't know.
Right. Without a doubt, I mean, this is a gift to the right wing and to the Trump supporters, because he has and continues to this day to say China perpetrated this, although his suggestion of veiled or not so veiled was that they did it on purpose.
Exactly.
And that's ridiculous. Not what we necessarily think is happening. But the fact that Biden is directing this for this investigation to take place does, in fact, suggest more than anecdotally that he believes something happened there. Excuse me. And to the extent that the right will run with this, they will run with this.
Oh, the hell with them.
Liam.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's a gift to the right wing, but I think that it's a way to pressure the WHO, and it's very unfortunate. You know, I highly respect the scientists who work for the WHO. I have no problem with them. But China, as a member of the WHO, has politicized and manipulated that body. And so they haven't done some of the investigations that we would want to see from them. They've prevented, you know, Taiwan, which has been one of the most successful entities in terms of controlling and preventing the spread of COVID, is not a member of the WHO, and therefore can't really contribute because China opposes their entry purely for political reasons. So, you know, this is, I don't know, I should say, I'm a current member of the intelligence community because I am an intelligence officer in the Army Reserve. And so I should mention, I'm just, you know, sharing my own opinion and not that of the Defense Department or the Army. But I'm not sure whether, you know, what kind of access the intelligence community has to what's actually going on in China. And so, you know, whether we're going to really come to a conclusion, a clear conclusion from this report is I think that's open to debate. But how it pushes the WHO to take a closer look at the data and really try to get some more transparency from Chinese authorities, I hope that's something that'll come out of this.
I was struck by what, Alan, you said before, you know, just the fact that Biden's looking into this now. You got to wonder what they know, what they found out.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Nobody wants to get caught flat-footed on all of this. And I think the big distinction between Biden following the evidence and the science and Trump making stuff up as he goes along because he's a lying liar is a whole different thing.
So, Ira, when you talk about a gift to the right wing, I mean, this has certainly been the a lot of the concerns and coming out of the lab. And I don't want to conflate all of these things together, but a lot of the Asian American hate that we saw was derived from that notion that this escaped from the lab. And while I use the word accidentally in the reading of this story, the question is, as Alan would say, accidentally on purpose.
Well, there's no evidence yet to suggest that it was done on purpose. All we know, the only people who think that it's done on purpose seem to be Trump and his acolytes. But the right wing echo machine will take the germ of a story, no pun intended, and they will amplify it often by suggesting, could this happen? Maybe it happened. Will it happen? And then sort of step back and let it run its course until things happen, such as people believing it happened and starting to attack Asian Americans as a result. There's a lot of difference between this being done accidentally and on purpose. And, you know, I give Biden credit for wanting to get to the bottom of this. I don't know that we could say the former president would have demanded a commission. Yeah. He just would have said, this is how it happened. How do you know? I know.
Ira Fussfeld on the Roundtable panel on Thursday, May 27th. We'll be back with more of the Roundtable panel, The Week in Review, after this. Welcome back to the Roundtable Panel, The Week in Review. On Friday's Roundtable Panel, Joe Donahue and Alan Chartok welcomed Libby Post, political consultant and lobbyist, back to the studio.
Roughly half of New York voters support New York Governor Andrew Cuomo as he faces down investigations into allegations of sexual harassment and his administration's handling of COVID-19 in nursing homes. And oh, by the way, there is Bookgate. There's a lot of stuff. So 49% of voters surveyed last week by Siena College Research Institute said Mr. Cuomo shouldn't resign, a slight decrease from the 51% of respondents who in April said the governor should stay. The poll showed that Mr. Cuomo's approval rating appears to have stabilized since March, when many of his fellow Democrats called for him to step down, and the Democrat-dominated state assembly launched an investigation that could lead to his impeachment. The key indication in the latest survey offered a mixed bag for the governor. While the percentage of poll respondents who said he should resign increased, the share of voters who said they were prepared to reelect him rose to 37% from 33%, so figure that one out. Alan?
Well, it's all about, is there an opponent?
Right, and there isn't.
And I don't think that there is. Obviously, Letitia James will be on the books. There are people, state senators, who obviously, are ready to move ahead, who are doing everything in their power to dirty Cuomo. Let's put it this way. I wouldn't want to be Cuomo, never have been wanted to be him, and I wouldn't want to be them. I wouldn't want to be them right now. So this guy's fierce, and that's why I gave him the nickname all those years ago, Tough Guy Andrew, and that is what he is. He's tough.
He is tough, and he's a survivor, and a political survivor. I want to make that clear. I watched part of his press conference yesterday when he talked about digging under the Grand Central Station, yep. And they're going to make a concourse, and there's going to be a city down there or whatever it was. And I mean, this man has done in the crisis communications mode of things. He has been textbook in terms of sticking to the message. For in a political crisis, you stick to the message, you just, follow through, you tunnel through, you get your message out there, you don't get distracted by, it's like he's in a political campaign. He's not being distracted by the naysayers or all the other stuff that's going on. And his numbers are rising. And you know what? I think he'll get reelected.
It's business as usual.
It really is business as usual for him. I mean, he is tough. He is a political survivor, and he knows what he's doing. And the people around him are staying on message as well. And he's actually doing things. I mean, he wasn't crippled. He wasn't paralyzed by all of this, which is what. Many, many politicians would become totally paralyzed.
They'd quit.
By it.
They'd right? be out of there
yeah.
right now.
And he was not. And he hasn't been. And he's just keeping doing what he's doing.
Now, none of this should be viewed, what Libby's saying or what I'm saying, as an endorsement of Cuomo. Look, he's done some things which raise a certain amount of questions. But he really is sticking with it. And yeah. I don't see how he gets beat. Do you think Tish James has the guts to oppose him in a primary?
No, I don't think. I think she likes doing what she's doing, and I think that it's a little too early for her to get out that way. I mean, she was very quiet until all of this stuff happened. She was his pick, and so she has been. She was quiet until all this stuff happened. Now she's focusing on the name that shall not be spoken, that used to be after the word president. So she's going after him as well.
45.
45. What a horrible thing to do to that number. But nonetheless, I don't think so. She's pretty astute, can read the political tea leaves. If he doesn't get impeached, that thing is going very slowly. That investigation is going very slowly. I just don't see it happening.
And that's what I was just going to ask both of you, which is that is an assumption that this impeachment inquiry does not go further than
where it is right now. Right.
Meaning it takes a very long time. It raises some questions, but does it actually do enough to have the legislature impeach the governor of the state of New York?
Well, it would be most unusual if they did that. And I think they would have to proceed at their own risk. I wouldn't want to be on the other side of Andrew, Tough Guy Andrew, at this stage of the game.
Not only that, they're going after him on sexual harassment. It's not like everybody down there is a choir boy.
I should say. I've been around long enough to know
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I work with these people. I love most of them. But there's plenty of harassment that goes on.
And always has.
Right. I mean, I worked there in the 80s, and it was really pretty bad, and that's one of the reasons I left. But, you know, it's part of the culture. So here they are. And they've taken stands against sexual harassment, and they passed the bills and all that sort of stuff, which is lovely. But has there been wholesale culture change around this? Probably not.
Okay.
And so they impeach him for this. They open up for those of the elected officials who do it themselves. They're then opening things up for their own behavior.
So, dear experts, then what does that mean if you were, and this is to Alan's point earlier, that I would just like to clarify. So if you were one of the legislators who said he should step down, he does not deserve to be governor of this state.
Right.
And now you have the people behind you saying, yeah, we think he should be. What does it mean for them?
Well, all I can tell you is if I were one of the people who's making these accusations in the legislature, as Livia has so poignantly indicated, I would take a look at my own the way I have proceeded. I would also, frankly, sleep with the light on.
Whatever do you mean?
Yeah. Well, it's hard then for to think because. I'm just struck by what Libby was saying, what both of you were saying actually, but the fact that you keep going and you just say ignore the man behind the curtain and people do, you can sort of get away with it, can't you?
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know if he can get away with the behavior, the sexual harassment behavior, but he can certainly get away with just maintaining his position and getting beyond it. You know, just getting beyond it so he can continue to do the work that he was put there to do. And you know what? He is. That's the thing. You can't fault him for the work he's doing. You know, I mean, you know, people can make whatever statements they want about, oh, you know, you can get free tuition if you get your vaccine or a lottery ticket or, you know, free admission to the track. I really don't care. I want everybody to be vaccinated. Whatever it takes to get everybody who needs to be vaccinated, fine. He's doing his job. He's doing the infrastructure stuff. Government is still working, you know? I mean, and that's what we put him in there for. I'm not making excuses for his behavior, folks. Don't even go there. But that's what we put him there for, is to do the work of the people. And as far as I'm concerned, that is still happening.
But, Alan, doesn't that in some way mean that he does kind of get away with it if the people are saying, okay, I realize all this stuff is going on, but what Libby's saying is the job's getting done and that's more important.
Put succinctly, yes, that's what it means. In other words, he will have toughed it out. I believe, and so does Libby, I think, without putting words in her mouth, that he has a very good chance, if they do not impeach him, of running again and winning. Another time.
No Republican is going to get elected statewide.
And who are they putting up?
Trump light. They're
some
putting
guy,
up
Lee Zeldin.
Some guy from Long Island who's a Trumper?
Yeah, right. I mean, Lee Zeldin. You know, I mean, he's not.
And Giuliani. You know, don't forget Giuliani.
Oh, yeah, Andrew. Do you remember him at the swearing-in?
I do.
Who could forget it?
I was like.
He's a little kid, and now he's all grown up.
I know, and he's acting the same way as he did then. So, you know, yeah, I know. I think it'll be Governor Cuomo in 2023.
Yeah. This Cuomo matter has elicited a lot of letters from our listeners.
Yeah.
And I would say, in my quick triage of the letters, would say that the listeners are mixed in their opinion. Let me share with you.
Please.
Peggy Jo says, thank you for your assessment of the governor. As I agree, as an ex-New Yorker and member of the medical profession, he helped save our country when the person who shall not be named is missing in action. Meanwhile, Florence says, all of you who are apologists for the governor, really? He wasted taxpayers' money on those terrible signs in the thruway and the Taconic touting tourism, made driving more dangerous actually, and really conveyed nothing. They were ridiculous. He hid problems with the Tappan Zee Bridge and the name change. What was that about? And the nursing home scandal and then chasing skirts any chance he got and typically blaming the victims of his sexual transgressions. Oh, poor him. The man is an arrogant fool.
Nobody's defending his actions.
Nobody's defending that.
Yeah.
We made that clear that we are not.
Right.
However, we were giving our assessment as to where he stood politically right now.
This is about politics, folks. Yeah.
Also, we got this from John. I hear all this language about how, quote, this is what we elected Cuomo to do. That sounds very much like the argument that Republicans made about Trump when they refused to hold him accountable. I feel like there is no way the panel would take such a blasé approach about Trump's behavior. A bit of double standard, don't you think, says John. Then we go to Jim. Cuomo deserves some censure, but in the upcoming fight slash war with the Trumplicans, I want tough guy Andrew on our side.
Tough guy Andrew.
Robert says Cuomo is getting away with what? He's not convicted. I would not let Libby on my jury. I don't think you have that option, but
no.
Well, but you good realize, for you. I would want you on my jury.
Oh, you realize that Libby's getting blamed for both being too pro and too anti.
Right.
That's a good place to be.
It is. It shows that I was right in the middle, and I'm just talking about the politics of the situation, which, you know, is different than the emotional response, the horribleness of his sexual harassment. But the politics of the situation is what it is.
So here's one more letter on that, which is, it is disappointing listening to the panel defend and praise Cuomo, who is a corrupt career and generational politician. Libby mentioned the government is still running. Is that all we have to come to expect? It is as if the panel is speaking as if they're nervous the Cuomo administration is listening. I think we know they're listening, and I don't think we're nervous, but that's okay.
We're not at all nervous. And by the way, he doesn't have any – he doesn't like me very much. No. That is for sure. And in fact, two of the worst things that he's ever done using the N-word was done when he is in conversation with me, and it made headlines around the world, and it almost knocked his block off. And then he also got into trouble for saying that he was on my show, that he was going to bring his mother up on a day that he told everybody not to travel.
To stay home,
that also made national headlines. So I have an answer to that letter.
The second part of it is, Michael says, I put Trump in the subject line because it reminds me of the right just looking the other way to Trump's abhorrent behavior. Cuomo is just the New York Trump. He is just slightly more articulate, but the same corrupt, tough guy figure. I don't want to put words in your mouth, so I'll just, but in my way of defending you and what you said, it certainly seems that you're looking this, given that you are a communications specialist and you work in the field of communications, political communications, your point was, and we said it over and over again, you're not endorsing this behavior, but the behavior with the electorate, and I gave the poll numbers, is working. I mean, meaning that his strategy right now,
right,
to get through what charges have been leveled against him is working.
That's right. It is working. And in the court of public opinion right now, it's working. I mean, he's going to have to be incredibly careful going forward. There's no two ways about it. But it is working. And I'm sorry, but to equate Andrew Cuomo with Donald Trump is the height of false equivalency. You might not like Andrew. You might not like the way he acts. You know, you might not. You certainly don't like, I hope, the allegations of sexual harassment. But we did put him in to run the government. That's what a governor does. There's a massive state government in New York State dealing with lots of different issues. And that's what government is supposed to do. And Andrew Cuomo, despite what you might think of him, is an incredibly smart guy. And Donald Trump is a savant in terms of marketing and self-promotion and narcissism. But in terms of having any grasp on policy, I think the way he handled COVID was absolutely clear that he had no grasp on policy. And look at the way Cuomo handled COVID. He was America's governor for a whole year. People throughout the country tuned in to Cuomo TV every day so there would be some sense of normalcy in their lives and some sense of reassurance that we were going to get through this. And you know what? For the most part, those of us who survived COVID, we have gotten through it and we are getting through it and we are opening back up and the economy is coming back. You know, that's why it's so important for everybody to get vaccinated. And I'm sure you'll get some letters on that one too, Joe. I am clear on this, that everyone needs to be vaccinated. And once the FDA approves this as a regular vaccine.
Right. Not emergency.
It has to be mandated. And no anti-vaxxer should be entertained on this at all. This is real. I had COVID. It is not fun. Lynn had it much worse than I did. It is not fun. And it is real. And Andrew Cuomo made it real for people, but he also took steps to make life better.
Look, I gave him the nickname, and it's been picked up all over the place, which is Tough Guy Andrew. And I want you to know that's what he is. He's a tough guy. He's hard to like, you know, but he is who he is. And it'll continue. He'll continue to be that way. I think as a politician, he may be brutal and he may be brilliant. B&B. But I have to say, I get it. I get why he's where he is. And I'm not a happy camper about this whole thing. I wrote a column this weekend about him and Christopher, which is really quite a saga. On the show with me, he was consistently doing the Smothers Brothers routine about Mama always liked you more than she liked me, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of stuff. But it's a little sickening. It is a little sickening, and he is a tough guy. And when he's a tough guy, he's not nice. And when he's not nice, I don't like him.
Alan Chartok on the Roundtable Panel on Friday, May 28th. Full episodes of the Roundtable Panel are available online at wamc.org/roundtable, and you may contact us by emailing roundtable@wamc.org. Thank you all again on behalf of the WAMC staff for supporting us this week and reaching our summer fundraising goal without a full fund drive. It's all in and all done until October. The Roundtable Panel will be off on Memorial Day. They'll be back on Tuesday, June 1st. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Thank you for listening.